Alright, time for another DraftPhysics.com, DebatePhysics.com also, video presentation. But, you know, again, the debate is just this circular nonsense, so none of the points I've made over and over again, illustrated, drawn, even showed a video of a lever working, none of the points will be addressed, and instead the same regurgitated arguments, making claims for evidence that doesn't exist. They have no evidence defending this momentum theory, this energy theory, 1/2 mv². They don't collect this extra energy anywhere in any experiment. And it's really, it really is a duality. So like the wave-particle duality, they've decided their physics is somehow better off not making any kind of coherent assertion, so they just leave this ambiguous nonsense that there's somehow something called momentum that somehow means something. And yes, you must conserve it. So I can play Professor Lewin's 101 physics video overtly saying, okay, that you can finagle kinetic energy, but you must conserve momentum. So that's the overt 101 statement. So clearly the physics is a mess because, frankly, both of them can't be real things. Momentum can't be a real thing. Weight can't be a real thing. And this idea that kinetic energy is a representation of real capacity to do something in the environment, real wattage, real heat. So it's like they have two definitions of what the mechanism is. And they aren't compatible. They directly contradict each other in most experiments. And there's just a few, where they can show some consistency. The broken clock is right twice a day kind of thing. Blah, blah, blah. 12-hour clock. Anyway, so he has a thought experiment here and makes an assertion. I guess I'll just read the comment through and then just point out how there's absolutely no evidence for his assertion. All right, take your lever pivoted on the fulcrum. Just put a one mass, not fixed, just resting one distance on one side. Now drop a mass from a given height on the other side of the lever. Well, first off, when you put something on the lever, right, it's going to tilt. So you're going to drop, so you have a tilted lever, but you're going to drop the same mass on the other side from a height. And you're going to now force there to be a lack of equilibrium, an oscillation in the lever. All right. Now, you would argue that measure the height of the first mass is propelled vertically into gravity. So we're really not going to be propelling the first mass. Well, anyway, the dropped mass versus the lifted mass. Now, I think we'd all agree that if I drop the same weight on this side as that's on this other side is going to leave with the same velocity that you drop the other one with. That levers are conservative of the momentum, so you will get back almost what you put in. The fulcrum will steal a little bit of the energy. So if I drop it from 2 inches on this side, I will raise the other one in the air close to 2 inches. It'll be something less. I'll lose some of the energy. Just like a pendulum loses some of the energy, I'll lose some of the energy. All right. So we agree that, yes, that's what will happen. One side will equal the other, the outcome on the other side, and you'll conserve the momentum. And if you want to call it kinetic energy, we'll conserve that also, because we're using equalities. Okay, same mass, same velocity. All right, now place a half mass twice as far from the fulcrum and repeat. So we're just doing, or we could do 4 times and 1/4 mass or 3 times and 1/3 mass. Doesn't matter. And with each case, we will exponentially and keep increasing the kinetic energy. So if I do it with 1/4 mass 4 times, I'll get 400 times. I get 4 times more energy. But anyway. Your theory predicts the half mass should go 4 times as high because it is twice the velocity, correct? Yes, that's what it'll do. It'll fly off the lever. Once it leaves the lever, it will be leaving at twice the velocity. And anything going twice the velocity will go 4 times higher in gravity because of the points I made yesterday in the video to you explaining Galileo's laws, rules. Okay, those rules work. That's what gravity does. You move a lot more distance, okay, in the second second than you move in the first second. That's the way gravity works. So you're in the gravity the same amount of time, or double the time in this case, and therefore you have collected, even though you have half the mass, you have collected the same amount of gravity because your half mass is in it twice as long. All right. all right, so it should go 4 times as high because it has twice the velocity, correct? Yes, there's no way of denying that you have a certain speed you will leave with the Earth, for example. It doesn't matter how I create that speed, that velocity, you will go, you know, what's required by the rules of gravity, the 1, 3, 5, 7 thing. All right, In fact, it will only reach half as high. So he states it as a fact, yet he has not a single piece of experimental evidence to demonstrate that to be true. That it's possible for me to move it twice as fast and still not go 4 times higher in the gravity. And obviously it has to have a speed sufficient to overcome gravity to start with. So we're not talking about oscillating. We're talking about dropping a mass, not just placing a heavy mass on the lever and having it oscillate. We're talking about dropping. We're talking about a free fall in gravity, which means the weight of the object is increasing as it's falling. So if it's a 2-pound weight, it won't land with 2 pounds. It won't weigh 2 pounds when it hits the lever. It'll weigh 4 pounds, for example. Anyway, in fact, it will only reach half as high as the one mass. So he has, and he puts exclamation points. He has zero experimental evidence demonstrating. So in 350 years, he has produced, science, physics has produced no experiment that demonstrates that to be a fact. The reason for this, it has doubled the inertia. So he's saying the lighter object has doubled the inertia. Why? How? Yeah, there's no explanation. Physics 101, he says. So there's a point where I'm just going to have to block you, right? Because this is just inane. I've shown the lever oscillating. You won't deal with that. I've shown a perpetual motion machine I can make out of Professor Lewin's experiment. You haven't explained how it won't work. You have nothing as a counter argument to a single point I make. I mean, you're ridiculous and rude and stupid. And, lots of negative character flaw in your cowardice and the fact that you won't actually deal with what I've actually stated. All right, so we're going to draw it one more time. Try to go through it because I'd like to also get to the, why does a lever balance? How does this side know, the side that's higher? You say you have the same weight on both sides, and somehow you have it this way. The lever knows to do this oscillating thing and go even. How does it know that? It's sort of a, I gave the answer because one of them's in the gravity first, or one of them moves first. But that's probably not right. And so I'm going to give a better answer. All right. So leave us do some drawing. I'll pause. Yeah, all right, should be back. Okay, so we start in his diagram with a lever, and we have a fulcrum. Okay, and we put the same mass will hit the same location on the lever. So let's just use this location. All right, and so we put a mass here, and we just say it's a 1. And this one's we're going to drop a 1 on this side. Okay, now the expectation, if we follow this along, is that this will fall this distance, hit the lever will now start converting its velocity. So it has a V right here at impact. Now, I like this whole discussion. So this is another experiment, 350 years they've never done, is to, like Galileo, do a weight experiment, you know, and just show us, you know, the weight of stuff as you drop it. So you take, you know, 1 kilogram, all right, and you have it on the ground, and then you have 1 kilogram a foot high, and then you have a scale, and you just drop it on the scale, see what does it weigh, okay, and then you drop it from 1 meter, let's say, you know, and you just keep doing these type experiments and see what does it weigh. All right, now, you know, a stick of butter, okay, 100 grams, falling, okay, 1 meter, is supposed to be 1 joule. All right, so, and if you sort of try to figure that out, it's basically saying that in this 1 meter of drop, that, you know, it's going to gain a certain extra weight. Now it's 1/10, okay, of a kilogram that you're dropping, and so you can start to parse it out. But you have to remember too that when it drops, it's going to gain most of its weight in the shorter distance. You know, than the longer distance, it would go almost 5 meters, 4.9 meters in 1 second. So you have to kind of break it down and say, well, you know, we're going 1/5 of the distance of 1 second's worth, blah, blah, blah. Well, anyway, so you end up with some number. Now, you know, and Professor Lewin, to bring up Physics 101, he actually jumps off a table onto a scale, but he's not measuring his weight. But he says something like, I'll weigh like 800 pounds. So the concept isn't foreign to them. They've just never done any clinical experiments to actually find out what the weight would be. So that's just another point to raise in terms of, well, this is pretty undocumented and they didn't send somebody out to map this territory at all. They didn't really go look at it. They just drew a picture of it, a vague picture, and said that's what America is or something. You know, they didn't send guys out to, you know, go find out what's actually where. Anyway, so it drops, and my argument would be is, yes, it weighs, its standing weight, that is, its weight in gravity, is a weight, 1 kilo, you could say. But when it hits, it's going to hit with more weight. So it's going to weigh like twice as much or something, right? And all it's going to do is transfer that weight into this object. And so, well, anyway, let's just play with the thing as it is. So this is his experiment. Drop the weight. If I have the same mass, the same distance from the fulcrum, I have the expectation that this will leave with exactly the same velocity this hit with. All right. Minus, okay, the losses to the how imperfect my fulcrum is. So the more perfect I can make my bearing, the more I would argue I'll conserve all the energy and get back what I put in. But let's just say you're going to lose 5% at least. Let's just say so it would be 95% of the velocity when this one rises. And it will fly off exactly the same distance this fell. Now that's he's agreeing that that's what happens. Okay, I'm agreeing that's what happens. That you're just going to transfer the energy from one side into the other side. Now if I just placed this object here instead of dropping it, then you could understand that it's just going to oscillate the lever. This side will go down and this side will go up. And whatever energy this went down with, this one will go up with. And it'll continue to oscillate until it gets to a balance. I guess I won't do that part yet. But I do have an explanation for why this side drops first. Instead of this side going down further, this side, you know, will actually push down. But anyway, we'll get to that. If I just had a lever and I had a one mass here and a one mass here and I tilt it up, it'll fall back down, okay? And there's a reason that happens. Okay, so let me pause and erase this, and then we'll go to the second scenario where he says everything completely changes. All right, back. So he's conceded that the same velocity in on this side, if I use all the same masses and the same distance, whatever the velocity was when this one hit the lever, that's the liftoff velocity of the other side. So he's conceding the lever conserves the energy, conserves the momentum. All right, and so now he's arguing that we should do the experiment again. So look, we always use the same size lever just to make the lever irrelevant. So, but now we're going to change where the things are positioned. So now the landing spot is going to be here. All right, and the mass is going to be here. And the mass is going to be 1/2. So it's 1/2 the mass, and it's twice as far from the fulcrum. And now we're going to drop the same full mass here. So let's just use a 2 to make it, you know, easier. We'll make this a 1 mass. Okay, so now we're going to draw twice as much weight, okay, but we've put it twice as far on the lever. Now, the lever tells us, the balance tells us, these two objects weigh the same. All right, that this, on this side of the lever, this far out, weighs the same as this here. So if I put a 2 mass here, it will weigh, that is, I'll put exactly the same amount of weight on this side for a 2 mass here or a 1 mass here. They will balance. So this side of the lever would say they weigh the same. They're applying the same pressure against the pressure of what object I put here. And so that's also a fact. Okay, a fact I demonstrated pretty clearly in the video clip. All right. So we're dropping it the distance. His argument is that now it's not going to be the same. That somehow this isn't going to be twice the velocity. Now, obviously kind of has to be, all right? But, you know, I don't even understand how he can make the argument. I mean, it has to be twice the velocity here that is here. And this can't tell the difference, so how could it make it go any different? So, yes, the obvious fact is this will go twice as far as this would have. Okay, so if I had a 2 mass here, it would go exactly the same speed as this. The landing speed will be the same as the takeoff speed. So this lever will gain the speed this has going down, the pressure. So this has to be twice. So it's twice the velocity. And there's no reason that if I stop the lever, you know, at the halfway point, you know, at this point where it has its maximum velocity, that it has to go 4 times higher in the gravity. Of course it goes 4 times higher. But again, it's only going to be in the gravity twice as long. It's going against the gravity twice as long. The gravity is slowing it down in twice as much time. That's why it goes 4 times higher. Because the gravity isn't working on it as hard. Because it's only a half mass. Half masses don't collect, half-size buckets don't collect as much rain. So it takes longer for them to collect the same rain. It takes longer for them to be slowed down by gravity. So they take 2 seconds. This took 1 second. This will take 2 seconds as it flies through gravity. Now it took the same time on the lever because it's connected to the lever and the lever's doing the energy converting. The lever's telling you what the real weights are, what the real pressure that they're creating is. It's doing the conversion. It's conserving the energy, clearly. All right, so obviously their theory says this is twice as many joules. You can't really have that. So in the experiment I showed, I did from one, you know, twice the distance, and I oscillated the lever. And clearly the point is that in oscillating the lever, okay, I can't change the facts. I can't change the fact that this distance is half of this distance. So I did 1:4, but it doesn't really matter. We'll just keep the 2:1 ratio as the understanding, and the lever oscillates. Okay, so there's a 2 mass here and there's a 1 mass here. All right, and the lever oscillates perfectly and then goes to balance. So the energy obviously is going into potential here, and then that potential energy, which again I don't really like the concept because it's the field that has all the energy. It's kinetic energy. Gravity is kinetic. And you're just sitting in a stream. You're standing in the rain. You know, you wouldn't call rain potential wetness. I wouldn't anyway. So there's just no denying that if the lever was oscillating and then I put pressure on it so it can't swing all the way up. So it goes to its maximum velocity. Maximum velocity is here. So this is V max, is always at this, at this point. It will be going its maximum velocity. So that's the maximum velocity point. So when this goes up, if I put my hand there to catch the velocity, the maximum velocity of the two mass, the fact is that the two mass will continue traveling, okay, whatever that, you know, whatever the velocity in gravity would be. And the same is true on this side. So if I stop the lever, I hit Vmax here, I stop the lever, but I let the mass fly off, the mass will keep continuing to fly at exactly what the velocity is, so by those rules. And clearly, even though the lever is perfectly oscillating, even though this side has to produce the energy for this side has to provide the pushing energy to push this object up. This object falling down creates the energy that will push the other one up. They have to feed each other perfectly. Their theory, their kinetic energy theory, says there's twice as much energy here as there is here. Somehow there's 100 joules in here, 200 joules out here. So everybody should know that can't be true, that you can't have twice as much energy on one side that you have on the other side, because one side is creating the energy to move the other side. That's his theory. And I demonstrate in the video, clearly I demonstrate that this is in fact happening, because it has to. Again, this position is clearly moving twice half the distance this one is. There's no denying it. So if I put the two mass here, it moves half the velocity of the one mass here. Can't deny the facts. And we know that the two produces the two, so the two has to produce the two here. It has to produce the same energy that this had. There's no way around it, logically. What is all this crap? Okay, so he makes an assertion that even though this has, this point right here will be twice the velocity, undeniable fact, and that somehow it'll only go twice as high. So even though it has twice the velocity, it'll only go twice as high as the other object in the gravity. When, of course, no, it has to go four times. Has to. Doesn't have a choice. Just understand, when it's oscillating, none of these objects are going takeoff velocity. They're all below the velocity necessary to be lifted off the Earth. So they're all below the 9.8 meters per second of pressure. So when it's oscillating, it's all moving slow. It's not moving free fall rates. It's moving much slower than free fall. That's why it's not going to lift off the lever. So you have to have sufficient velocity to create the extra. So you have to put the extra energy in. You can't be at oscillation. You have to be past oscillating speed. All right. Okay, so now I'll do the why question regarding how the lever knows what side of the lever is supposed to be going down. All right, so in a previous video, a couple of videos ago, I was thinking on the subject of how a standing lever, okay, knows. So I put a two mass here and a two mass here, same distance, okay, same distance from the fulcrum. How does the lever know that this one's supposed to fall? I mean, technically they're in exactly the same, they have the same weight, okay? So the lever is not moving. I just put it in this position. So it has a two mass here and a two mass here, and I put it in this position. Why does it do this? Okay, and dramatically do this. Why does this go down and why does this go up? Because you could theoretically say that if I really did consider gravity, the gravity this one's in is even a little bit stronger. You know, if you go like 9.8... numbers, this would be 9.89 and this would be 9.88 or something. You know, this is a little more gravity because it's a little closer to the Earth. So theoretically you'd say, well, this side should still be heavier, and so this should move down and this side should move up, and the more it moves up, the higher it gets. Oh, well, that's bad, because now this is even in more gravity than this is. Like there's some kind of differential. But the key is this, the fact that the, you know, if the eye objects can't slide off, obviously they would just slide to new positions, so they obviously have to stick to the lever. What's really happening is the angular momentum. So I forgot about the angular momentum. And that's really what's going to cause this to fall. It's because if you really look at it, okay, if it went this way, this is more this way than this way. Okay, where going up the circle, you're more this way than you are that way. And so this one is converting less of its energy into angular momentum. So this one is falling this way, which means it's going to make a big arrow this way and almost no arrow this way, right? So none of its weight is going to be converted into motion this way, where this object is converting most of its motion into this way and less of its motion into down. And that's the difference. Big down, little sideways, big sideways, little down. So that's why this one falls, because less of its angular moment, less of its energy, less of its weight is going to be converted into motion in a unuseful direction. So it has motion in the useful direction that's much bigger than this one. So as it's moving this one sideways, okay, this one is falling down, and that's why this one goes first. So I think it's a much better explanation than my previous statement, which was something I knew this one goes first, and so I was sort of arguing that, well, this one's higher in the gravity, so it gets hit by gravity first, which is stupid, because the rain is falling here just as much as it's falling here. You can't really get into more rain by going up. So that's kind of stupid. Well, it's, you know, kind of incomplete. Yeah. What I was really thinking was just about the action being first. Like this one would run out of its energy first, because this is the one pushing this one up theoretically. But I really, we're doing this from a standing position. I'm just pushing the lever into this position and letting it go. And when I let it go, this is going to happen. So I can't really say that this one ran out of its energy, because, you know, they're both in a static position. They're starting from, I'm holding it down, and then I'm just going to release it. So, I mean, I really can't use some argument that this someone knows somehow that it's going first. Really can't know that. So all that can be known is that when it starts to, when it's feeling the pressure, this is pushing more down than this is, because this one's pushing sideways. And that's the difference. All right. The energy is being converted into angular momentum rather than weight down in one case than the other case. And that difference in the conversion rate of the energy is what is causing one to overcome the other. I think that's a good enough explanation. Yeah. All right, so we'll just briefly go over this again. So I've pointed out the terrible history of the mv squared, that Leibniz made no rational or logical arguments, provided any physical evidence in defense of the theory. Nobody believed him. Okay. Then de Chatelet did experiments defending mv squared, so no half in front of it. So those experiments are all debunked in the modern age as being 50% off. So they had a 50% error rate. Yet they claim they proved it's mv squared, when obviously the proof must suck in some way, because the truth is it isn't. It's one half mv squared. So obviously all those clay experiments and sand experiments were in some way flawed, because they don't represent the truth they accept today. So you have to accept that obviously they're flawed. I would say they're 100% flawed, but they're obviously, you're conceding they were at least 50% flawed, which is a huge flaw. So you have no evidence in the 1700s you can say it was reliable or good, because it proved a completely different theory. mv squared, not 1/2 mv squared. Completely different theory, frankly. If you put a 1/2 in front of something, that's a completely different theory. All right. And the modern age just snuck the half in the 1800s like nobody noticed. And just because, probably because they were realizing these numbers are crazy. Because now they could do some mathematical shenanigans because they had a silly definition of work, which is force times distance, when it really should be force times time. How long are you in a force? How long is a force being applied? That will decide how much energy you collect. All right. How long you're in the rain will decide how wet you get. And the same truth is true for force. And they perverted that into, no, it just matters on, how far you move. When, no, it doesn't matter how far you move, because we know how far you move isn't a consistent speed, especially in gravity. You're moving through it much faster, depending on how long you've been falling in it. All right. So all that's true. It's just terrible history. I've, done the experiments. You have no experiments. You don't have any proof that 8-pound balls moving twice the speed knock down twice as many pins. You don't have any evidence that lighter wrecking balls knock down more buildings. There's nothing. You have no rational evidence that, if I have two guns shooting each other, somehow that experiment, the two guns, I put one gun inside the barrel of the other gun, and I fire the same bullet inside, the same amount of explosive, and the two guns fly away with a total of 4 joules. That's it. That's all the energy produced, 4 joules. Now I put a bullet in the gun, and all of a sudden I have the same exact explosive, and now all of a sudden, when I do the experiment, I have 2,002 joules. So, that's conservation of anything? That's obeying any Newton law? That's a 101 piece of physics? That somehow, when it's one mass against one mass, I only have 2 joules of energy total, and when I make it one mass against 1/1000th of a mass, somehow I have 2,002 joules. That makes sense to you? Yeah, I'm sorry. In the context of all the other bullshit, you're going to accept that bullshit too? And say you're something other than fanatics, religious kooks? Yeah, I think that's bullshit. All right, so I'll deal with it. I threw in a little bit of philosophy the other day, so, philosophy not related directly to physics, but it's sort of related. Seems you do believe in free will. Why do you say you don't? Well, I say I don't because I don't. And this idea that it seems I believe in it seems to me your perverse interpretation of anything I've said. So I clearly have argued that you're a mechanical system. You're a calculator. And what we're really just talking about is how does different programming get into you? And I'm clearly saying it always comes from the outside. It comes from some experience, provides the ingredients, and all you can do is mix the ingredients, and that's it. You're a bowl, okay? The bowl has certain bumps and lumps in it, and then you throw ingredients in, and the mixer turns on, and depending on what lumps and bumps you have, you will mix ingredients different than somebody else mixes ingredients. So we can both see the same thing. We can both watch my video, and because you have previously made bumps into your bowl, in the sense that life has bumped you, ideas have bumped you, those bumps have mixed in your brain and created a condition. Your sandpaper is 50 grit, mine is 38 grit, or whatever, through our life experience. And so somehow you're interpreting the video as saying somehow there is some free thing. Well, frankly, first, I've always made this argument that there's no such thing as a free. Okay, there's just freedom from. There has to be the cage before there can be any notion of a freedom. So there is no freedom. Freedom is the white space. You first have to have the black space before you can have any anti-black space or freedom. So you're free from. I can't be free from my understanding, free from what I know. So once I know 2 plus 2 equals 4, I can't know 2 plus 2 equals 5. I can't do it. I can want to do it, or I could something else it, but I can't change the fact that now I do know it equals 4. So I'm just saying every experience changes us. We believe things, and so I'm just saying if you were to encounter through your life experience the notion that the only thing controlled by your brain, right, is it's mixing, and it's just mixing ideas, and then you have the idea that, hey, wait a minute, if I have certain ideas in my brain, then my brain will mix differently. And if I have the idea, okay, just the idea, just the thought, okay, that the only thing I can do in the world is I can change how I react to things. I can't make the sun stop shining. I can't make the earth stop rotating. But how I react to those things can change what happens. And that's all there is. So if people act stupid, I have to interpret that stupidity and come up with a strategy, okay, logically. I can think about it. I can mix it. And the fact is I can mix it into different scenarios. I can find different possibilities and then act on those observations. I'm not doing anything freely. It's still just a program. It's still just my bumps in the bowl. And I'm just conceding that if I happen to have a bump that says, think more. Yeah, think about what you're doing. It works better. That's all. It's not, I didn't freely do anything, okay? I just took in the information, and the information sort of just screams. The image of the maze clearly just says, well, maybe you should write down all the failed paths, and then you can finally find the one that's right, right? So you're not being redundant. That would be wasteful, is to be redundant. So try something. If it doesn't work, you know, remember what you did, and then do something different. Because if you do the same thing, you'll get the same result, right? So those pieces of logic, I didn't say came from any free place. They obviously came from the world and the experiments and the interactions you've had. And those are what provided the reasoning and logic for you to see that's what the game is. So I'm just saying it's just a fact I've observed, okay, that reactions are important, that I can react expediently, or I can react thoughtfully. And the fact is, the expedient reaction is not as good as the thoughtful reaction in terms of it's not as well tested, and as a simple fact. But the fact is that we don't even have, you know, we don't have the luxury of spending a great deal of time in contemplating our reactions. I'm just suggesting that it's a piece of logic, a piece of reasoning that would state it's probably a good idea. There's nothing free will about that. Just happens to be my script is constantly changing. Who I am is constantly changing. Every, you know, the nuance of my bowl and what's being mixed is constantly changing. I'm not changing it. Okay, time is changing it. Previous circumstances are changing it. The lumps in the bowl are changing it. The ingredients coming in are changing it. I'm not changing it. There's no me doing the changing. But the collective thing called the bowl and the ingredients are changing. That's just a fact. What they're producing, what's coming out of the bowl, changes. But I didn't freely do any of it. I did it all based on, you had to take piano lessons to learn how to play the piano. It's all based on, I had to have the encounter that made it possible for me to be changed. But just understanding the fact that that's the world we exist in is another piece of information in the bowl that will control the bowl. It will control what's mixed because it's now an ingredient. And that ingredient will change, okay, what's mixing in the bowl. But I didn't make the ingredient. This is so frustrating that people are so, you know, they're literal when they want to be, and then they're, you know, poetic when they want to be, and, you know, they just play such a game with words, and they do this, like, if I pointed out that there's not a significant difference between one human and another, in the sense that you might have 1,000 varieties of human perspective. You know, schizophrenic, this, that. You could have all kinds of labels you could put on them. But once you got to 1,000 people in terms of personality types, you know, that would be a pretty... That would be a pretty dense portrait, you know, 1,000 personality types. And to argue that some kid born tomorrow isn't going to fit into one of those pigeonholes, it would be pretty stupid. So the truth is that there's a, you know, if somebody's born tomorrow and, okay, they don't have my blue eyes or my blonde hair, but they're going to have a lot of parallel experiences in their life and they're going to get to a certain perspective, a certain point of view, that's generally speaking going to be generally very close to my own in terms of the level of stress and tension and discomfort and, you know, all of those negatives. And they're, you know, going to be perceptually experiencing their conscious experience very much as I am. And that's just a fact. It's not me, but it's close enough. What's happening in their brain is close enough to the same thing. That why would I worry about tiny little differences, like what color the sail was on the first sailboat they were on, or some kind of little bullshit thing like that. Yeah. So in a sense, they're a clone. And so clearly you can make the argument in defense of your own future. You're going to be in the future. Yes, it won't be you. Okay, you won't have the same mother and the same exact father and the same this and the same exact that. But it's going to be close enough. So, but you can't make that argument without them saying, you believe in reincarnation. No, nothing gets reincarnated. It's just that every carnation, every iteration of a human being is not all that unique. Okay, it's not all that magically new and special. It's like the differences between the snowflakes. Who cares? Okay, the differences just aren't different enough. Now, clearly, the diversity between human beings, you know, mass murderer versus whatever. I suppose there's some sort of good guy somewhere. I don't know. It's hard to come up with a good human, right? I mean, the last good human would be the one that actually got an award for being a good human. That's probably the scummiest scumbag on Earth. But anyway... Clearly, there's a great deal of diversity in humankind in terms of character and lots of attributes. But the fact that, yes, generally speaking, two eyes, a nose, a mouth, lots of stuff that are very similar in terms of functionality and the quality of the life experience. Okay, I'm just saying there's a percentage of the human race, okay, it's just going to be made up of people who find life quite angsty, okay? They're not just sailing through it. They don't like their job. They don't, you know, they don't like, you know, going to the in-laws' house. They don't like doing a lot of things, all right? And life is kind of grisly and sloppy and messy and, you know, they're always squinting their eyes. Yeah, I squint a lot. You know, they're always, and it's just a fact. And they're very different people from the ones that are just la 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 la, you know, just living in their own little la 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 world. Yeah. So anyway, till the next time and such, and so forth and whatnot. Anyway, so this has been. Oh, I should do the website thing that I didn't do before. Yes, I probably should do that. All right, so this is a version of the website, but we'll go get the right version. So I fixed the little stupid link. All right, so this is the one version of the website. Now, on this version, you can just click this website 2.0 link up here at the top, and that should take you, okay, to the comment approved version. So I don't approve too many comments because most of them are disgustingly redundant and They should not be in any way rewarded for all of that. But anyway, so as I stated, I have posted the five most relevant videos I've made lately. So it's the actual lever argument. Now, I should probably put on here the lever experiment video, because yes, it's probably a good addition also. And so basically just making these kinetic energy arguments, and then there's three videos doing the overview of the more complete physics, the unification of the physics, and these three videos cover how you can understand it all as a mechanical process involving just things called force bits and matter bits. But anyway, so there is the ability to post a comment, and then you have these videos by subjects. Now, I have to admit I haven't updated too many of these categories, but there is all kinds of categories with the, you know, videos on those specific subjects. I suppose I should put black holes in here somewhere, but oh, disgusting. Anyway, so, you know, they're still relevant videos. I just argue that I've probably made some more current videos that are a little better than the videos on these subjects. See, like you click on gravity and there's four videos on the subject, and, you know, the most recent one is 1117, I guess. Yeah. I have to figure out how that got there and this one got here. I don't know. Maybe this one's even newer and it's just not dated. It might be a YouTube video. So the difference would be if it's a YouTube video. Yeah. They should go, the top should be the newest, I guess. Yeah, I just don't remember. See, with kinetic energy has quite a few videos. Let's see if the newest is the newest. It appears to be that way, yes. Okay. So the top is the newest video. I probably have it whatever I think is the best video, which generally speaking will be the newest video, one would hope. But anyway, so that's that. Yeah, I probably should have links to the other stuff, but obviously when you click one of these videos, it just takes you to the other website to watch the video. So both websites are kind of, you can get from one to the other fairly easily. And then, of course, there's debatephysics.com. And, but again, it's just so hard to find anyone to engage in the discussion, okay, where they actually counter your arguments. So they just keep making arguments, but they provide no explanation for any of the arguments I made. They know no counter arguments to any of the arguments made, which is not a good debate. That's why you need to have the debate live, so you can keep just pointing out, that's not the question I asked. That doesn't address the point I made. And you can actually force them to address the points made, which they never do. I mean, it's a fact that Leibniz didn't convince anyone. You know, very few, 99% of physicists at the time were not convinced by Leibniz's arguments. Just a fact. You know, why were they unconvinced? I think the simple answer is because there wasn't any reasonable evidence defending it. All right, anyway, enough said. So, this has been draftphysics.com, debatephysics.com also. But as stated, no person capable of interacting in a comparable forum that I am interacting in. So, tough luck so far. Till the next time and such.